But the person who wrote to me said, well, that can hardly be, because over in Matthew's gospel, when they get the gifts, why, they're to go out into the highways and hedges and it's the servants of the master who are to do that, which would be, of course, the apostles, the 12 apostles. And the 12 apostles never went out and talked to Gentiles and never had any commission to do so. Well, that makes that kind of hard. And some people say, well, John's gospel is speaking to Gentiles, who are the other sheep that we find in John 10. And again, we run into a wall, because it's ordinary, and ordinarily, the word sheep is used of Israel. I can give you an exception. And of course, we always have to have an exception, you know, to prove these things. There are a number of them in the Bible. For instance, take the word bosom in the Bible. Always translated bosom, except in one place. It's treat. And the word overthrow is always overthrow or foundation, something like that in one place. And over Hebrew, it's strength to conceive seed, Sarah. And you go into the Psalms and you'll find several of them are acrostics. And you run into one of them, one of the letters is left out. The acrostic is imperfect. Imperfection of human nature. And so I could go on and on with exceptions. Now you can, maybe you can't guess where an exception where Gentiles are called sheep. And above all places to find it too. In Matthew, 25th verse. The nations that are judged when the Lord comes, the nations of the earth, the Gentiles, are divided into two groups, the sheep and the goats. And the sheep and the goats both belong to the herd, the flock of the shepherd. And the goat could be used for a sacrifice as well as a lamb in the Jewish rituals. Well, now you could take that question, you see, there and so on. Now, the question is John speaking to these nations which are to come up when the Lord comes to the earth, or... Well, John's audience was all gone long since. If he really wrote to at that time, they might apply to the future, I don't know. But somehow or other, when we come to that judgment there in Matthew 25, we find these people didn't know the Lord. Well, then John's gospel is not going to do them any good. They didn't know the Lord. And so they go on in the millennium and evangelize with the 12 apostles. And John will be in that group, but he won't be giving them the message he gives in his gospel to us Gentiles. Well, now that's a little fun, something to wind your mind around and just try. Now we get into this here before we waste all our time, if it is wasted. In chapter 14 of Acts, our first topic is the persecution of Paul and Barnabas. See, Acts is in the New Testament, I guess. Yeah.
15:13.
Acts 14. All right, here we are. Well, down in verse 2, they went down to Iconium, and the unbelieving Jews stirred up the Gentiles and made their mind evil affected against the brethren. Now, the Jews ordinarily wouldn't have anything to do with Gentiles. And when they got some ulterior purpose, something like that, of course, then they would go in cahoots with him. A long time, therefore, abode they speaking boldly in the Lord, which gave testimony to the word of his grace, and granted signs and wonders to be done by their hands. But the multitude of the city was divided, in part held with the Jews, and part with the apostles. And so they got them together, and they were going to stone them. And so they went to Lystra and Derbe, cities of Lycaonia, the region that lies round about. And there they preached the gospel. All right. That takes us down about to another thing that happens. Verse 8. That's our second topic under verse 4, or chapter 14. Paul heals a cripple. There's a certain man at Lystra, impotent in his feet, being a cripple from his mother's womb, who never had walked. and you heard Paul speak, and you believed, and Paul said, saw what he did. That's why he got up and walked. And he not only walked, he leaped. Never in his life had they taken a step, lame from his mother's womb, never been able to walk. And immediately got up and walked. Now, how long does it take a child to learn to walk ordinarily? After a lot of falls and bumps and so on, staggering about. And this man got right up and not only walked, but he could leap. He could jump. Now, there's a miracle for you. Never done it before in his life. Got right up and started performing. That would be a miracle. Ordinarily, we'd think, you know, he'd have to learn to walk. It'd take him an adult, probably, with his mentality and so on. He might learn to do it in a few days, a lot like riding a bicycle. Of course, some people learn that in just a few hours, and some of them take a little while. Well, the people saw that, and they were going to worship Paul and Barnabas right away. They thought they were gods and come to visit them. And things went just fine for a little bit, but it didn't do so, didn't last too long. Well, let's see. Paul preached to them and so on, and down through verse 17. Then verse 19, there's where the thing changes. Paul was stoned at Lystra, and that count begins with verse 19. That's the third point. And there came thither certain Jews from Antioch and Iconium. You see, they had to follow him up. They hated him so much, they followed him up. Even in those days when traveling was hard. Who persuaded the people, and having stoned Paul, drew him out of the city, supposing he had been dead. And he was dead. It wasn't just a supposition. Because when they stoned a man in those days, he wasn't likely to survive it. If you know what kind of a ceremony they performed in stoning the dead. But he got up, went into the city. Next day he was departed with Barnabas to Derbe. And verse 26, after they had done some going back and forth, some of the places that they had preached, going back their steps, in verse 26 they sailed to Antioch. Once they've been recommended to the grace of God for the work which they fulfilled. Now, this is not the Antioch of chapter 13. This is Antioch in Syria, north of Damascus. That's where he started out from. They went to Cyprus, then over into Asia Minor, took a tour, retraced their steps, and then in verse 25, they went down to Italia. And from Perga, he sailed to Antioch and reported to the congregation there what they had done. So there's the four things under chapter 14. Verse 1 to 8, or through 7, persecution of Paul and Barnabas. 8 to 18, Paul heals a cripple. 19 to 25, Paul stones at Lystra. And 26 to 28, end of the chapter, the return to Antioch. Now we get to chapter 15. Now they're at Antioch, north of Jerusalem. Get that. And certain men which came down from Judea taught the brethren and said, at Antioch, and here is a bunch of Gentiles believing up there, except ye be circumcised after the manner of Moses, ye cannot be saved. Now, we'd have to stop and tell them what the word saved would mean, wouldn't we? Do we need to go over that? Here are men who have believed and have evidenced the gifts of the Holy Spirit, and yet these men say to them they have to be circumcised in order to be saved. Now, you see, we have so misused the words in the Bible, giving a particular meaning. Now, looking at that, we wouldn't know what they meant. Now, Paul was actually saved on the road to Damascus. And yet he was a believer from his youth up and had done all that had ever been required. But on the road to Damascus is when he entered the kingdom of heaven. That was a step further. That was his salvation. He entered into a group of people then that had a mission to perform. Paul did not have any mission until on the road to Damascus. He thought he had, like a lot of people today do. Out on the mission field and in the pulpits and in the seminaries and everywhere, and a lot of people think they have a commission. And they may be working against God just as much as Paul was before his trip to Damascus. But there he was stopped right in his tracks and recognized the Lord as the King of Israel, as a Messiah who had come here as a child on the earth, born at Bethlehem and lived in Nazareth. Now, what these fellows are trying to say to these converts is that they cannot enter into Christ's kingdom. They cannot be saved or enter into Christ's kingdom unless they're circumcised and be associated in with Israel. Because that had been the law of Moses, that any believer, if he wanted to be an Israelite, partake of their blessings and their hope and so on, he'd have to be circumcised. So they could quote scripture for this. But you see, Paul had had a mission given to him when he was in the trance in the temple. And that was to preach the gospel of the grace of God. That in this particular time, that Gentiles did not need to be circumcised. They just believe and they receive the gifts of the Spirit and partake of Israel's blessings. That is, a graft in wild olive branch, partaking of Israel's blessings. That's what the word saved means. Not saved from something particularly, but saved unto something. That is, unto Israel's blessings. And these fellows from Judea just couldn't believe that these Gentiles could partake of Israel's hope and their blessings and part in their kingdom unless they were circumcised according to the law of Moses. They would not recognize the fact that Paul had received a commission, a vision, and Peter had received one too. And they knew that. They knew that very well, but they just couldn't accept it. When therefore Paul and Barnabas had no small dissension and disputation with them, they determined that Paul and Barnabas and certain other of them should go up to Jerusalem about the before unto the apostles and elders about this question. Well, we won't go through all of that. It's a dispute about circumcision. Verse 6 starts in with the council. And they consider the matter. It's all about circumcision. And they make a decision. Now the council, we have its account from verse 6 to through 22. And James finally takes the floor. And he says in verse 13, "Men and brethren, hearken unto me. Simeon," that is Peter, "hath declared how God at the first did visit the Gentiles to take out of them a people for his name," that is the house of Cornelius. "And to this agree the words of the prophets," that is written. Oh, the prophets had foretold this, that the law of Moses wouldn't always just hold according to the letter. And here's what the prophet said: "After this I will return, and will build again the tabernacle of David, which has fallen down, and I will build again the ruins thereof, and I will set it up, that the residue of men might seek after the Lord, and all the Gentiles upon whom my name is called, saith the Lord, who doeth all these things." The Gentiles are included there, and that's quoted back from the Old Testament. And James goes on to say, "Known unto God are all his works from the beginning of the age. Wherefore my sentence, my decision is, that we trouble not them which from among the Gentiles are turned to God, but that we write unto them, and give them four things there to abstain from, and that is all necessary." They didn't even need to be baptized. They didn't need to keep any veil supper or Lord's supper or anything else they called it and so on. They didn't have to do that. They didn't have to keep the Feast of Tabernacles or even Pentecost. They didn't have to be circumcised. They didn't have to bring any offerings to the temple. They had nothing under the law of Moses whatever. And yet by grace, the grace of God, they were grafted in and partook of Israel's hope, would be in the millennial kingdom. And that was hard for those folks to believe at that time. And the purpose of the whole thing was to provoke Israel to jealousy. You see, that program only went on for a few years, about 18 years, and that was ended at the end of Acts. I have no hint that it'll ever be repeated. Well, now let's see here. Verse 36. The parting of Paul and Barnabas. And some days after, Paul said unto Barnabas, let's go again and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord and see how they do. Barnabas determined to take with him John, whose surname was Mark. But Paul thought not good to take him with him, who departed from them from Pamphylia and went not with them to the work. Not too much of a hint of why. Now, as we were saying here once before, Mark was not a young man, not a stripling, as a lot of people would tell you. And we don't know why he didn't make the trip. We're not told. But remember that about 3 years before this incident, that Mark had written his gospel. He was not an immature young man. Just kind of hard on some of the traditions of men, but there we have it. Well, now chapter 16. And we start that off with something strange too. Paul went back through these with Silas, these cities where he had been before with Barnabas. And he got down to Derbe and to Lystra, where he had been stoned to death. And there was a young man by the name of Timothy. And evidently the son of a widow woman. She was a Jewess. But his father had been a Greek. So that made him a Gentile. Absolutely, because the woman had nothing in it. It was the fathers that denoted their particular relationships as to whether Jew or Gentile. A Jew could marry a foreign woman, and by that marriage she became a Jewess. But if a Jewess married a foreign man, then she was a Gentile. She took her husband's status. And I can remember when that status was observed in our own country, that a woman had the nationality of her husband. When women began to get their rights in this country, then they had to go and pass examination to become citizens too, as well as anybody else. I can remember back when the change was made. And that was following somewhat of the old Jewish custom of doing that sort of thing. Well, the question has come up among theological circles as to why that this Timothy, who would be a Gentile, that Paul had him circumcised. Now, in the Galatian epistle, which Paul had written before this, he had brought out very pointedly what his gospel, the grace of God, was. And twice he said it very strongly, if any man preached any other gospel, and he had preached, let him be accursed. And yet he made it plain there that for Gentile believers, that circumcision didn't avail anything. And if they were circumcised, it made them subject to the whole law, which Israel weren't able to obey. And that these Gentile believers were putting themselves in bondage if they were circumcised. And then he says, let any man be accursed who preaches any other gospel. And then here we find him seemingly, that is, I say seemingly, going right against his own doctrine, letting himself be accursed. A problem, isn't it? But you'll notice the close relationship between Paul and Timothy throughout the book, and especially when you read the epistles written to Timothy. And you notice that Paul speaks him as a son, and so on, and that so far as I've been able to find so far, there's only one way out of this problem, and that is that Paul adopted Timothy as his son. Now, being his adopted son would make Timothy a Jew. And if he were a Jew, then he would be subject to law and he needed to be circumcised. As long as he was a Gentile, he didn't need to be. So when he became an adopted son of Paul, then he took his status, and so the circumcision was necessary. I haven't found any better answer than that to it yet. I'd welcome one if anybody had one. Well, that takes up the first 14 or 13 verses here about these things, going to these places and visiting them and so on. Name some of the places he went to. And finally, they go to Philippi. All right, now beginning with verse 14, after they get into Philippi, we have Lydia converted. That's your second point. Timothy circumcised, your first one. Verse 14, Lydia converted. Well, now this is strange, very strange again. Paul had had a vision, and a man in Macedonia said, come over to Macedonia and help us. And he gets over there, holds his first meeting at Philippi, and a woman is converted, not a man. In fact, it's a meeting of women and no men there, for the Riverside. Now, if you were in Paul's shoes and you had a vision like that, and it turned out to be a bunch of women instead of a man, I wonder if you'd feel a little bit disappointed. Well, as we go on with the story, we find that many, many men were added too. And Paul didn't stop there, but he did have a very good success in Philippi. In fact, that grew into such a loyal group of workers and believers that we find later on in Paul's writing that he speaks of them in his letter to the Philippians after Acts 28:28, that they were the only ones who had contributed to his living, his expenses, that none other churches had done. So, this little beginning here with the conversion of Lydia and going on brought out quite a thing of Philippi. And one of the gems of the Bible is Paul's later epistle to the Philippians, telling us more about the mystery, and especially in Philippians 3:20, the citizenship in the heavenly places. That's 14 to 18, Lydia converted. Now in verse 19, Paul and Silas get into prison. Paul was always getting into prison. He was quite a jailbird, wasn't he? But it seems that those experiences always brought about something good, somehow or other. They gave him an audience. Gave him a chance to preach his gospel. And so, we start in with verse 19 up to through 35 concerning their prison experience. So now, they got in the prison because of a little girl. Or did you know that? Well, she had a spirit of divination by some spirit called a serpent or a python. She was able to tell fortunes and so on. Of course, she had a couple of masters who made use of that, and they made a lot of money from it. Of course, people pay big money to get their fortunes told, even up today. And she had something to say about Paul. And somehow or other, that started things. Well, let's see here. What verse is it going on? Oh, yeah. And back in verse 17, here's what she said. These men are the servants of the Most High God, but show unto us the way of salvation. Now, that's perfectly true. What she said was absolutely the truth. Well, why would Paul want to rebuke her and throw this evil spirit out of her? Well, you see, the Lord himself would not allow demons to give testimony of him either. They confess him. But he doesn't want that kind of folks confessing. And of course, this girl herself was not doing this. It was the demon within her making this message. The girl was all right, but she was just possessed with this demon. And she wasn't responsible for what she was saying. Well, the masters, when they saw the girl had lost this spirit and she couldn't tell fortunes anymore, they really got angry. And so they made all kinds of charges against them, brought them before the magistrates and so on. And they got in prison for it. And so that takes us to 19, Paul and Silas in prison. That's the reason for it. Well, Paul and Silas abstained right while they were in prison, and that seemed to injure some of the other prisoners who heard it. But their jailer was asleep, he didn't hear it. And all at once the old place shook. And it must have shook pretty hard because the doors flew open and the chains fell off of their hands and ankles, and the stalks fell apart, and they were free. And Paul and Barnabas didn't run for the freedom either. They didn't do a thing. But the jailer was going to kill himself because he was responsible, you know, as the Roman rulers were for his prisoners. And he took his sword and was going to kill himself. And Paul yelled at him and told him, just wait a minute. And so he explained to him a few things. Well, the jailer was converted, was saved, became a member of the church, as a member of the kingdom of heaven, and another Gentile brought in by Paul's gospel, the grace of God. And the funny part of it was that he was saved. Magistrates didn't even remember that about the jail getting open, the prisoners were going to get out or something. Because when they found out that they had put Paul in this prison and he was a Roman citizen, they began to think about their own skin. And they wanted Paul and Silas to get out of the city just right away if they possibly could, because they didn't want any more of this. So in verse 36 we have there, city, and the people of the prison told this saying to Paul. And the sergeant in verse 35 said, let those men go. The magistrates were sent to let you go. Now therefore depart and go in peace. But Paul said unto them, they have beaten us openly, uncondemned, being Romans, and cast us into prison. And now do they thrust us out privately, silently, without anybody knowing about it? Well, there's an age already, but let them come themselves and check this out. They're the ones that got it into this. Another change, you see. It's all to have a testimony. And the sergeant told these words unto the magistrates, and they feared when they heard that they were Romans. And they came and besought them, begged them, and brought them out and desired them to depart out of the city. They weren't quite so high and mighty now, are they? And they went out of the prison and entered the house of Lydia, and when they had seen the brethren, they comforted them and departed. Just took their own time to it. There are Romans, and so they couldn't touch them. Well, those are interesting chapters. I like to stop and dwell on them a little bit, but if I don't get on here, I'll never get through. Chapter 17, Paul preaches at Thessalonica. That's 1-4. And we might as well just go over that rather quickly because we know the old story. Verse 5, the Jews persecute him. 5-9. So then he is sent to Berea, verse 10. And of course there is where we hear about the Bereans are more noble than those of Thessalonica. And they search the scriptures daily to see if those things were so. That's in verse 11, if you want to find the reference on that. And then he went on to Athens, and in verse 15, he preaches the unknown God at Athens. That's on to the end of the chapter. So there's four items under chapter 17. Paul preaches at Thessalonica. 5, the Jews persecute him. 10, he is sent to Berea. 15, preaching the unknown God at Athens. And he could come into a lot of our churches today and still preach the unknown God. That's a comment that no charge for. Chapter 18. Paul goes to Corinth. He's really going into the lions now. At that time, Corinth was possibly the wickedest city in the world. It was a cross place. That is a central place where the routes of trade and so on met and went different directions. And so you find all people from all nations in Corinth, with all their temples and all their idols, gods, and whatnot. And there's where he meets Aquila and Priscilla. Paul speaks of his Prisca. And there in verse 5, the Jews persecute him in Thessalonica. Verse 1, Paul goes to Corinth. Verse 3, his occupation. They were tent makers. Well, this is about the first we know why Paul's life, work or occupation was. See, every Jewish boy was brought up to learn some kind of a trade. It'd be terrible if a boy grew up and didn't have some trade that he could follow, something to make a living in. Wouldn't be a bad idea today, would it? A lot of kids get out of school and can't do anything. No trade, no training, whatever. And it's getting to the place now in our country that there's no demand anymore for ditch diggers and street sweepers and so on. Those jobs are gone. We have machines to do a lot of that stuff. And you have to have a little education to run the machine. And so the kids fool around in school and don't learn anything and get out to find themselves among the great ranks of the unemployed. Well, his occupation then was tent making. And Aquila and Priscilla had the same occupation. In that verse 4, and he reasoned in the synagogues every Sabbath and persuaded the Jews and the Greeks, or Gentiles. So he is preaching then to Gentiles here. Verse 4. Verse 9, Paul has a vision. Then spake the Lord to Paul in the night by the vision, be not afraid in this wicked city of Corinth, but speak, and hold not thy peace, for I am with thee, and no man shall set on thee to hurt thee, for I have much people in this city. I went in the city as that was, and still God said he had much people in it. And he continued there a year and 6 months, a year and a half, teaching the word of God among them. Rather interesting. Well, now we get down to verse 12. When Gallio was a deputy of Achaia, the Jews made insurrection with one accord against Paul and brought him to the judgment seat, saying, this fellow persuades men to worship God contrary to the law. And Paul was about to open his mouth and go and make the sanction. Gallio says, if were a matter of wrong or wicked lewdness, O ye Jews, reason would that I should bear with you. But if it be a question of words and names and dear law, look ye for it, for I will be no judge of such matters. And I drave him from the judgment seat. He wasn't going to be embroiled in any of this petty business they were charging against Paul. Well, pretty wise. I won't go on with any more of that story. And then we find in verse 24, a certain Jew named Apollos. He was preaching and he needed some more instruction. Alright, so much for that chapter. 5 items. Or 6, which was it? Oh, yes. He goes to Corinth, his occupation, his 6th item, preaches to the Gentiles, his vision, 4.5 years, judgment of Gallio, and preaching of Apollos. Gets us down to chapter 19. And Paul is in Ephesus. Paul stayed at Corinth, and Paul went on to Corinth, or went on to Ephesus. And we find certain disciples there, which we can't enumerate. In verse 6, we have the gift of the Holy Ghost. In verse 11, we find that Paul wrought special miracles. That is, God wrought special miracles by the hands of Paul. It says it very correctly. Those from his body were brought into the sick handkerchiefs or aprons, and diseases departed from them, and evil spirits went out of them. Not at the church, which is the body of Christ, started back in chapter 13. What's he doing all of this for, which is like Pentecost? That's hard for some folks to explain. Verse 24. Paul got embroiled with the labor union. Boy, did he get it. Verse 24. For a certain man named Demetrius, a silversmith that made shrines for Diana, brought no small gain to the craftsmen or union workers, whom he called together with the workmen of like occupation, and said, and so on, a harangue, and ends up with a mob, which was called an ecclesia, which is a church, or the mob of Ephesus. And you get down to verse 35, and you have the address of the town clerk, and he dismisses the church, or the mob. Assembly. Verse 41. Now that's the same word that's used for church, but it's mob. I think I have about time maybe to go over the next chapter yet. Chapter 20, the first verse. After the uproar was ceased, Paul called his disciples and embraced them and departed for going to Macedonia. And he goes on into Greece and so on, further journeys for the first six verses there. We have a mention of the first day of the week. And would you believe it, in one of the Bibles I found that this was titled here, Observance of the Lord's Supper. But it says in verse 7, upon the first day of the week, that's Sunday, not the Jewish Sabbath. When the disciples came together to break bread, and that's usually used in the Bible, having a meal together, Paul preached unto them, ready to depart on the morrow, and continued to speech on the good news. And that's when he preached about all night, and Eutychus fell and got hurt. He broke his neck, didn't he? So in verse 10, you have Eutychus brought to life. In 17, he is at Miletus. He has taken some journeys. He's at Miletus and has the elders of Ephesus to come down there, and he gives his charge to them, his last speech to them. Verse 17. And in verse 29, he takes up a little theme there. You can just get it in that verse. It goes out really the rest of the chapter. For I know this, that after my departure, shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock. Paul was looking ahead to what was going to happen. These grievous wolves, what are they? False teachers. Men who love gain and don't love the truth. Want to get a following, take up their collection, and be the big it among the people. Well, now our time is up, so we'll have to sit there and start at 21 the next time, starting back to Jerusalem. Let's have a prayer. I didn't believe this, Mr. Father.